This is Flight Training the Way I See It with Mike Schiffer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Flight Training the Way I See It news, opinion, mostly opinion, and news. And I'm your host, Mike Shiflett. And if you don't get our newsletter, this is a video podcast of the electronic version of the newsletter we sent out to you. You can get a copy of that newsletter every month get a copy of the newsletter by going to cfibootcamp.com and opting into the newsletter side. We also do a power hour. It's a 1 hour deep dive into something aviation related. And for example, this week's going to be cross country flight planning using ForeFlight. And some advanced tips there. And so that's going to be on Saturday. And that is after you've seen this. So you can also see all the power hours. We've done 135 of them or 136 of them. They're in our membership site. But the way to see live power hours for free is to go to cfibootcamp.com, and there's a red bar at the top, and it asks you to opt in to the power hour, and then you'll get reminders of when they are, and you'll get a reminder like midweek. Then one on the day, about an hour before the show starts, and you get one right when it starts, just before, so you don't miss the live show, because those are all free. So, anyway, we got a lot to talk about this week, this month. It's May, about the end of May, and let's get started. I'm going to talk here. The topics are going to go over that our company is now doing on-site training for Mercer Community College in Mercer County Community College in Trenton, New Jersey, up that way. So we're going to be up there in June to talk about that. We're going to talk about teaching risk management using ForeFlight's profile view, which if you don't know that, that's pretty interesting. Another reason to get the newsletter is sometimes we put links in there so you can click on so you can watch a video or some expanded information. So we can't really do that in the podcast, but we certainly can do it in the newsletter. And then we're going to talk about a big change we made to our CFI program on day five. And if you've been here for day five in our CFI program, you probably already know what's on that day. It's my easy day and your difficult day. But anyway, we're going to talk about big changes we made there. And we're going to go through three pro tips, again, that we always do for each newsletter. So that's what we're going to do. And so I guess we'll go ahead and get started. So let's do that. Let's talk about CFI Bootcamp is going to New Jersey to train CFIs and CFIIs in June. So beginning in June and this year, we're going to teach a CFI sit-down class. They're going to do the online course, like a seven-day class. And then the online course they'll take for CFII, and then we've made a two-day course for them for CFII. And we're going to be doing that at Infinity Aviation Group in Trenton, New Jersey. And that's at the Trenton Airport. And we're also going to do flights with them as well. So we're going to do flight and ground. And this accelerated program is going to turn out CFIs that the college needs pretty quickly. And they'll be taking tests after we leave. And so there'll be myself and Jonathan will go. He's a flight side. He also does content writing for us and other things, but he's a flight instructor as well. And we have Vince, he's from New York and Brooklyn, and he's going to drive over for 3 days, and he's now part of our team, and we'll use him for that, and we'll also use him for cleanup flights the following week if we don't get it all done in the 9 days we're on campus. Only there are 9 days, imagine that, but we're going to do that. So we're really excited about the opportunity to provide great experience and really thorough training for them. It's going to be a long day, so I start the ground schools at 7 a.m., and yeah, that's early. And then I'll be done with my part by about noon, 12:30. And flights start out right then. Students have about a half hour to get something to eat, which we've told them all to bring their stuff. And our instructors are also bringing their own food because there's not a lot of time. And then we can fly to about 7:30 or so. So we have enough time to do the proper debriefs and that. And so that's the idea. So anyway, if you're around in that area, and you want to stop and say hello, so if you happen to be, in that area, or you're from there, then you can shoot me an email at mike@cfibootcamp.com, and then I'll tell you the dates, that generally times we have. We have an hour lunch, so it will be 7, 8, 9, 10, it'll be 11 to, it will be 11 to 12, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, yes, 11 to 12. That'd be when lunchtime is, and that's the best time probably to catch me, or after the class. So that's that. Next thing I want to talk about was teaching risk management using ForeFlight's profile view. So I've said this many times, but those of you who have for flight and your instructors, or even students to that, or even not a student, even pilots, right? You need to get the performance pro version of for flight. That's the highest, higher version. It's not the basic and it's not the mid one. It's the one after that has performance stuff in it because it has some features in there which make risk assessing and make planning a lot easier. So in the power hour, I'm going to be doing about using for flight for cross-country flight planning. I also teach how to mitigate risk or how to assess risk using the profile view, among other things. And if you don't have for flight's subscription at that level, which is around 300 or something, you go like, I know what you thought. Oh my God, $300. Yet most of you will go out as pilots, new pilots, and buy $600 pair of sunglasses, right? Or $1,000, $2,000 headset, right? But this is a tool for you. This is not really an expense. It's something that you need. And by the way, if you join SAFE or NAFI, so safepilots.org or NAFI.net, those two organizations represent flight instructors. One of them, NAFI, Flight Instructors, National Association of Flight Instructors. The other, SAFE, Society of Aviation and Flight Educators, is pretty much everybody, flight instructors, university people, anybody who's teaching someone in aviation. You'll get a third off your for flight subscription. That's a third off the subscription. So that's a good reason. You pay them $45 or $55 and you get, you know, in this case, I get what, $100 off. So I want to make sure you do that because there's just some really, really good features. And I'm going to talk about those here in just a second. So if you have a for flight subscription at the pro or higher level, you're going to have something that makes teaching risk management a lot easier. That's the profile view. And it's in the flight plan. So if you're used to using for flight and you press the FPL button at the top in the maps page, at the maps view, then you can put a flight plan in there. And once you've done that, on the bottom right, there's a button that says profile. And if you tap it, it will show you the profile of your route with your altitudes and all the airspace, special use airspace, and terrain in there, right? And it'll show your route compared to all that, which is really, really nice. And you can take your finger, grab on your altitude you have, and slide it up and down and see where you're not conflicting with terrain or not doing this or not doing that. In addition, you can now use what we call them step fixes or place step climbs. That's what we call it, where you would come up to some altitude, level off for a while, and then because you're avoiding airspace or something, and then go back up again, maybe a few series of that. So you can do that now within for flight. That'll show up on the profile view, and you do that. If you don't want to know how, I'm going to be instructing everybody on that on the power hour I'm doing tomorrow, which is the Saturday, the 27th, I believe it is. Yes, 27th. That feature is, you can access it if you go to the profile view and you have all your, you've put in your flight plan, then all the fixes, all the waypoints are also going to be at the bottom of the profile view that you can click onto. And if you don't see them all, which sometimes this is kind of a little trick, you need to zoom out on the profile view window. You can actually pinch and zoom it. So you can, or you zoom in or zoom out. And so if you don't see it, zoom out until you can see it. And you'll see the labels of them at the bottom. And if you click onto it, you'll find an option down there. It says set speed, altitude, da, da, da. And you can say cross the fix at this altitude or start at the climbing at this altitude. And that gives you really good flexibility in your ability to do multiple steps or climbs. They call them altitude legs. But that's, and there's a video on that, how to do that on for flight's website. But anyway, so the idea of risk management here was to use this profile view to see if you're going to hit anybody's airspace, if you're high enough, low enough for the terrain, and if you've got the Pro Plus version that we spoke about, then you also have more layers. So if you go in that profile view and you look on the left, there's layers, and you can turn those on, and there's in there for icing, turbulence, clouds. And so if you turn on clouds, for example, you can see the clouds, both the bases and the tops, in the profile view. So you can see if you're going to be on top of them or below them or in them, or in icing for IFR. This is a really good tool for teaching risk assessment. So I would really encourage you to get for flight at that level. And there's another thing you can do, which is another great tool. Things have come such a long way, and it's so nice to see these tools. So one of the tools is called 3D View, and it allows you, if you go to the airport that you want to, or your route, or it doesn't, you can, well, let me tell you a better way to do it. Take your flight plan that you put in, in flight FPL. So you go to Maps View, FPL at the top, put in a flight plan. Look at it in profile view, great. Looks good, looks like this doesn't look too bad, but you really don't know what the terrain looks like, do you? You kind of maybe have an idea, but you're not entirely sure. So what you can do is there's a, it looks like an earth, like a circle in the profile view at the bottom, the very bottom of that, along the bottom edge of the, or bottom of the profile view box, you'll see what looks like an earth. And actually not at the profile view, it's at the, let me check real quickly. It is in for flight. Let's just go right to it here. So I've forgotten if it's exactly here, but it's pretty obvious once you see it. So I'm gonna tap profile. So it's not profile. Then we go to edit. Yes, so if you then, so if you're in flight plan mode and then you go to edit, I think you might see it. This is the edit menu. And by the way, this is profile view is here. I'll show you that. Profile view looks like that, which is beautiful. And you can pinch and zoom it. So, you know, you can zoom in, zoom out with that. So, but in the areas talking, if you go to edit, then what you can do is something pretty magical, okay? There's, it looks like a little sphere, like this thing right there, that little thing. And if I tap that, it's gonna fly this flight in 3D mode. And we can put it, I've got a 20x speed here. So I can click that. And this will begin flying that route. And I can see the terrain. I can see everything. So I can see where I am relative to all the terrain I'm gonna be flying in or around, see if I'm gonna be high enough. And you can see right here, this altitude I selected in the flight plan is about 4,500 feet. And it looks like that'll clear that fine. And we turn and we start climbing again. And we keep climbing again. And this is a beautiful feature. This is something you can use. A student would really love this because you can show them that some landmarks, like airports, aren't the best checkpoints. If they're small-ish, you're not gonna even see them. And you could say, do you see how you can't really see the airport? Or did you think this is a really bad route because it's going over a lot of terrain with nowhere to land, right? You can show all this. And then it turns one more time here and then starts climbing again. So you can see all this, and I think it's a grand tool here. And you can play at one to 20x speed. So I'm going to go ahead and, you can also change the view. If you take your finger, you can change the view of the plane that's following, how it's chasing you. So this is showing chase plane mode. And so you can position where you want the chase plane to be. Like if you wanna see the side of the route or you wanna see the top of it, or, and so you can look around basically, which is kind of handy. Okay, so let's leave that for a moment. So these are some of the features that make risk assessment very good. The other thing we've got is Hazard Advisor. And so that's in Hazard Advisor. So if you go turn off the flight plan, tap it, and if you go to the top left, which is where the charts and everything are, on the right-hand side, there's Hazard Advisor. And if you turn that on, it will show you, it will colorize the terrain, as you can see maybe here. You can kind of see that I picked 11,500 feet as my route, and it's just barely enough. If you're within 1,000 feet of the terrain, it will be shown in yellow, and your route will be superimposed there so you can see. And if it's within 100 feet, it's red. So then you can slide, there's a slider bar on the right, that you can slide up and down and see what altitude makes the colors go away, right? So that might be handy to you, for risk assessment. So use ForeFlight in that method to help you get a good risk assessment on profile view. And of course, this couples with a weather briefing and personal minimums and other things. But in general, you know, this is a pretty good tool to use for risk assessment. So that's what I wanted to say about it. Let's see. Then we want to talk about, so next thing. So anyway, join SafeNav, you get a third off ForeFlight, right? Also join AOPA. Two reasons to do that. Actually more than two, but let's say the two big reasons are, number one, you get access to the Pilot Information Center, the PIC Center. That is 12 CFIs that work for NAFI, or work for AOPA, and all they do is answer questions all day. And they've been doing it for so long, and they've acquired so much information that there's usually not many questions that they can't answer, whether it's a regulation question, an endorsement question, am I allowed to do this, can I do that, what about this, what about that. They're really good for that. And they have a legal team upstairs who, if they can't answer it, then they can sic them on it. So there's four attorneys that work specifically for AOPA. Then the other thing we can talk about there is the pilot protection services that AOPA has. At the pro level for your CFI, you need that pro level. It doesn't cover you CFI if you're not pro level. This all costs me about $170, $180 per year. But believe me, you pay a lot more if something begins to happen to you. And using the resources from the Air Safety Institute, all the videos, all the quizzes, and all of the ability just to call up and ask questions, is we do that in our CFI class. Usually per class, we call at least once, and we get an answer to something that some student or something we didn't think about. And we get an answer pretty quickly. So that's another reason to join AOPA. SAFE and NAFI will connect you to industry like we are, like flight instructors. So it's more flight instructor centric or teaching centric. It's not just representing pilots. So join SAFE or NAFI and you'll get 30%, not 30, you get a third off your four flight subscription. That's the basic or any of the subscription levels. Okay, now let's talk about one of the things I've been wanting to talk about for a long time. And when I talk about it, it's going to make me smile, I'm pretty sure. So here's the title, and we can talk about it. So I said, CFI Bootcamp removes using the E6B from its training curriculum, and why you should too. So I've been on a mission to call the E6B what it is, obsolete, right? It's obsolete. And what continues to be a rite of passage in aviation really robs instructors and students of real-world training, right? So basically, I make the case that you can... We can teach you to use the E6B, manual flight planning and all of that. But the day you get your pilot certificate, you will go teach yourself for flight. That's what you're going to do or something like that. You're going to go, I'm not doing this, right? Who wants to do it? Take me longer to plan it. Does the goal, right? So these tools were great when there was nothing else. So one of the things, our mantra was, we're going to teach to the problem, not to the tool, right? So the problem is navigation, right? Getting there. The tool is irrelevant, right? As long as we have a good grasp of how to use it, what happens if it fails, and multiple sources of backup, because we can't fly without backups of things in aviation. Doesn't make any sense, right? Because we have no ability to stop and get new things. We're going. That's what we're in there doing something. So with that in mind, you know, I say in reality, flight planning probably takes between almost 10 hours to teach, using E6B, maybe a little less, let's say five, I don't know, something in this region. That's 5 hours that I don't get to show my student how to use ForeFlight, because he's got to pay me twice, right? One for a way he's never going to use except for a flight test. And then the other way, I don't get a chance really to show him, and I can't show him things that all these DPEs get crazy about. Like, well, what are you going to do if your battery dies? What are you going to do if, what are you going to do if wings fall off? I don't know, you know. It's this stuff that it's nonsensical, right? Because if you train properly, then these things could happen to you, but not enough things happen to where you can't navigate. So let me explain. So if you have, ForeFlight gives you three subscriptions for, well, three devices you can use for the same subscription, right? So you can use two iPads and an iPhone, or you can use two iPhones and an iPad, right? So you got three things there. Take advantage of that. If you don't have an extra iPad, go get one. Or something, right? Borrow, whatever, steal, whatever. No, can't borrow because it's got to be on the same Apple ID. But get one. Go find a used one. Find something that's, you know, not the best one in the world, but you're just going to use it for this purpose, right? You'll find one, an iPad mini from something. So that's your multiple sources of backup. And make sure everything is current all the time, right? Before you go on a flight, everything is charged. And if you have an iPad that's more than 2 years old, consider replacing the internal battery, having Apple do that for you. Or someone else do that for you, because these batteries can fail kind of quickly, right? The other thing to have, which takes care of this problem, is a battery brick, or basically a backup battery system, like you would have for a phone. You see people with looks like a little brick, a plug USB into it. That's a big old battery in there. And so you need to have one that has more capacity than you have hours of flight, right? So if you have a flight that's 3-4 hours long, you need to have that be able to power your iPad with Sentry or whatever's on it, whatever you have in it, or whatever the case is. You need to have that for minimum an hour after the flight time that you need, just like fuel. And so with the combination of this, with the combination of you having GPS and you having ADS-B, which you get before, you can get, right? You have internet traffic and weather, as well on ForeFlight. And then you have multiple backups. So you've got your main source, you've got a phone, two phones, or two, an iPad, and something, you have enough. So the chances, you know, of everything failing at one time would be equivalent to the DPE was paper, and all the door flying open, all the charts flying outside. That the odds are better of that happening than there is for you losing all your stuff simultaneously. So, and on top of that, you also have air traffic control that you can get assistance from if that goes sour. So I don't think there's a lot of risk here. It's important to understand ground-based navigation. I totally get that. I'm not opposed to that. But I'm saying let's start using the features within the EFBs that we have, like Garmin Pro, like ForeFlight, like whoever. Let's start using those features and teaching those features, because there we can teach and we can risk assess. Right? And we can make way better decisions than if we just have pencil and paper and an E6B. Now, the E6B is pretty much the last time I'm going to give it any kind of credit, you know, from here on out. So I'm pretty much saying, you know, it's a done deal. I just want to take it to the rifle ranges up here, and I want to take a firing squad, and I just want to get rid of it, be done with it, right? Now, if it's your thing and you like it, you go ahead. But if you're training like that, what's going to happen is that if you really need to use that tool, which now after the check ride you haven't used for how long is it going to be before everything fails and all you've got is an E6B, it's going to be a long time. So when that happens, you're not going to know how to use it anymore because you haven't practiced it. You're not proficient with it. So what's the point? There is no point is the answer, right? There is no point whatsoever. They say, well, it teaches the principles of navigation. Yeah. So the only way we can teach mathematics is with a slide rule. That has to extend that way, right? The only way that we can teach trigonometric functions with a trig table and then slide rule for logarithms and slide rule for adding, not adding, for dividing, for multiplying, for we have to go back and use a slide rule, right? Because then we'll be good. The problem with those things is they're very prone to error because there's a single number printed on the outside inside ring and you have to scale it by units of 10. So 10 could be 0.1, could be 0.001, could be 100, could be 1,000, could be 1,000,000. It's a multiple of 10. So you can make, you know, kind of an error. So if this is true, then you don't need the E6B, which I finally said, you teach navigation, you don't need it at all. It can be convenient, you have to give it that, but you don't need it. So then what do? You could use geometry and arithmetic, and you could see. What we do is we have a new course called Principles of Navigation, where we teach maps, map projections, what the difference is between a grid circle and a rum line is. We teach the principles of navigation, what variation is. We teach what deviation is. And then we set up a route and we show the effect of wind using the triangle of velocities. Basically, it's just a vector diagram, right? Scalar. So you basically have a true course, you know, then you have wind coming somewhere and you connect the nine, you have drift angle, right? So we said this is why you have to turn now to the left. So I'm teaching you the true principles of navigation, not the result of your effort. The E6B shows the result of your effort, but I don't think it teaches you anything about the principles of navigation unless you can just look at it, and because you can do the triangle velocities on scalar vectors on the backside of the E6B, but no one ever teaches that. Or very few people would teach that. That would be a graphical sort of way to do it. So in our presentation, we go through that. We see how ground speed's derived, what the drift angle is, and why you need to turn the airplane in such a way, and why the course will be then across the ground will be the same, but your heading will be different. So that's what we do. And then the tool doesn't matter, because the other thing we teach are TLAR skills. It's something brand new. It's a funny name, but it's not, and I don't even think it's real, but it's what we call it. So, because one of our students said it one time, and so I just robbed it from him. So TLAR skills are the things that let you not get in trouble when you fly. So before, if you didn't have good TLAR skills, I'll tell you what that is in a second, you would take off, and if the GPS said fly to the south, but you really wanted to go east, if the pink line went to the south, you would just go south and be like, guess we're getting there. Something, it did something, maybe there's, you know, maybe you didn't realize, you just flew south, right? So, and then things like when the G1000s first came out, people would put the range ring down to about 8 miles or less, and they couldn't see the airspace. It was just about ready to fly into in another 30 seconds. So they didn't know to put the range ring at about 20 miles, so they can see ahead and then zoom in when you need to, right? These are kind of things, soft skills that need to be taught. So TLAR skills allow you to estimate. They basically say, when I take off from this airport, the approximate heading will be generally like 050 east, and it's about 100 miles, so it's going to take about slightly less than an hour. So that's what I know to that, right? And so therefore, when something electronic spits out, and I look at it, I can say, and it says it's 400 miles, you know, it's going to take 5 hours to get there, 4 hours to get there, and the heading is south, I know it's wrong, right? Otherwise, if it's reasonably close, and I say I trust the calculation enough within ForeFlight or whatever I'm using to rely on that, because other people are doing it every day and they're not falling out of the sky. So what is TLAR? That looks about right. TLAR, that looks about right. You get that, you know, when you're younger, you don't have good TLAR skills because you haven't been around enough, and so you accept anything, kind of sometimes anything, is as being the truth or as being okay. Or here it says, it's ForeFlight said it must be true. Yeah, it could be true, probably is true, but you have to put your TLAR skills up against it and say, well, if I had to do this plan on my own, I would estimate a few things. Like the plan I showed you goes to Bishop, California. There's a lot of twists and turns there. So I would have to say, by this time, if it says to be at 3,000 feet, that's too low, right? And it's impossible for me to 11,500 feet within the first 5 miles. So these are kind of things, the TLAR skills that you have to know. You can't just let something crunch the number and spit something out and you blindly follow it. You have to produce that. So we're teaching that in the school, our class, soft skills, including the use of the principles of navigation in a visual way. So we have taken the E6B out of the curriculum. We're not having anybody bring them. We're not having people use them. We're not using them at all. The only way we're going to teach you how to use anything to do with an E6B and a plotter is if you're DPE, you're going to insist on it. Otherwise, and that's just for that purpose, no other reason. And if I have a chance, I'd like to talk to that DPE because I'd like to explain this case. So, okay, well, last thing, so I just want to tell you that we finally got that out of the curriculum. It's been a long time coming. So these are the three pro tips, and I'm going to tell them to you. The first one is that instructor, you have to recognize when your student is task saturated. So what does that mention? The Aviation Instructor's Handbook mentions it, but they don't really do a good job of saying what to do about it. So when a person first starts learning how to fly or doing something, they're engaged in that thing, and that's called the psychomotor domain. That means that they're hardcore in the doing. And so if you need to explain something, talk to them, or they're afraid of something, right? Then you have to get them out of the psychomotor domain or the affective domain, which is the feeling side. Or maybe they're afraid of stalls and about ready to do it, and they're so involved in that they can't, number one, do the stall, and they can't hear you because they're so consumed with their own fear. You have to take control of the airplane. I have control. And you put them in the cognitive mode. So there's the affective domain and the psychomotor domain. Psychomotor is doing. Affective is how I feel about it. If I like it, don't like it, I'm afraid of it. And the cognitive is I'm thinking. Okay, now I'm getting information. I need to do something with it. So if you need to explain something, you need to take control of the airplane. Because when they're task saturated, they don't hear you. And they just don't perform very well. So they need practice, that's for sure. But if you absolutely need to stop the lesson, stop there and say, let me tell you about this, then you have to take control. Okay, so that's one thing. The second part is it's easy for an airplane to creep forward when you're doing a run-up or you're in the run-up area at night. Very easy for that to happen. So you also lose situational awareness if you let that happen because obviously you're doing something. You're not looking outside, right? If you're looking outside, you see yourself creeping. So generally it's because you're using a checklist incorrectly. So a checklist is a checklist, it's not a do list. So it's not challenge and respond like if there's multi-crew, right? It is not a linear read that. If you're using a checklist like that, you're doing it wrong, right? It's gonna make you spend way too much time looking down in the checklist, and you're likely to skip over something because your eye goes from this back to here, but I like this, and it's likely to miss something. So the way to do it is use a mnemonic or use a flow and then do everything, is and then use the checklist to see that you did it all. Because you might not remember what the magneto maximum drop is, right? But you note that it's 125. You said, I think it's pretty close to the border, but let's finish the flow, finish my thing, they'll come back, then you look at the checklist, it's 125. Okay, so it's within 150. So, or not. So that's how you use it. I use the mnemonic cigar tips, CIGARTIPS, and that's controls. Then the next, I check the flight controls, free and correct. Instruments, check all the instruments, make sure they're functioning, including the engine and electrics and a vacuum if there is one. So that's I. G is gas, make sure that I've got the proper tank selected and I have enough. A, attitude, that's for trims, all the trims for takeoff. R is mixture rich and run up. right? And then I do the run up and I go verify with the checklist when all this is done, right? And then the tips part, TIPS is transponder on, interior doors and windows closed, and P is position lights, and if it's night, and S is seatbelts and strobes. That's it. So that takes care of a lot of airplanes. I can fly up to Beach Barren, no problem with that checklist. Again, backing it up with the written one, but after I've done everything, right? So I might consider that. That might help you. Okay, and then you're less likely, when you have your head out the cockpit, you're also situationally aware. You can see if someone is coming at you, towards you, if there's an animal. You can see if you've creeped, you know, all this stuff, but not if you keep your head buried in that checklist. Okay, now, when using an EFB, don't rely on the iPad's internal battery. I think we said this about. Instead, go get a battery pack, and that can exceed your flight hours, right? And also fly with your phone and another iPad. So you need to have multiple layers of backup. And once you've got that, then when that DP tells you, or whoever's telling you, that what are you gonna do if this happens? What are you gonna do if that happens? What's this gonna be, you know, what's the result of this happening? You know, you go like, you know, we can live in 1950. We can pretend we're living in 1950. And we can do all that. And then we're not gonna track many people into aviation again. When that's all there was, that's as good as it got. Well, you know, then it was like, well, that's as good as it was. Remember, they had, so they did many things differently then. You had to take your television antenna, woo, come in Tokyo, woo, Tokyo, right? To whip it around to something. We don't do that anymore, right? So there's a lot of things we don't do anymore. So, and then the odds, right? You're an odds person. So I can tell you that the odds of your EFB failing in flight and both of your other devices is very, very low. Right, if you've done everything correctly, like you have the battery backup we discussed, you have the if you have the multiple devices and they're not in the sun, there's SOPs, right? For every area, there's things we need to know, right? Or for every not every area, for every iPad that we're going to install, there's certain things we need to know, like the overheating issues. We need to know what to do about that and how not to let that happen in the first place, and where our backups are out of the heat, right? So with some training that we're now fortunately going to get back, because we're not going to teach E6B anymore, one of the things we're going to do in our CFI class is we're taking a half a day and we're covering advanced flight planning and ForeFlight and teaching using ForeFlight. So we're basically using ForeFlight's documents side, how to connect up our CFI essentials in as a Dropbox right to it, so we can use it anywhere. We can annotate on it, we can project it, so much more. Don't we want to be doing that and not doing some with a pencil and a grommet and all this? Do we really want to do it? No, we don't want to do that. Okay, that's about as much as I wanted to say for this month. I'll give you an update in terms of what happened there in New Jersey. And by the way, I had one other announcement. It was brand new today, or yesterday, I guess yesterday. So we are going to be teaching in another CFI class. So we're doing another initial CFI class in North Las Vegas, at North Las Vegas Airport at Chenault Aviation. So if you're interested in coming to Las Vegas, that's going to be July the 10th, 10, 11, 12, 30 through 16. And they can do flight. We're not doing flight there, we're letting them do it, but we're doing their students. So we'll be doing some students from the university they pair with. And so we've got either remote or in-person availability there if you fancy coming to Las Vegas, right? And so that's another class where we've just added. So that'll be July the 10th. And we'll also open up our classroom in Opa-locka so that, or Palo Alto, so that anybody who wants to attend in person with other students can do it. Of course, I'll be remote from Las Vegas. I'll be in Las Vegas, but everybody else can zoom in and be with a class of people if they want. So that's kind of, we're experimenting around with that. But that's gonna be nice. So we're ready to move on that. They use Diamonds, and they also use a couple 172s, but Diamonds what they use a lot. So it's a really nice airplane to fly. It's easy, it's very forgiving, and you might check that out. The only thing I don't like is a canopy. It's hot, but there you go. Anyway, but we're lucky to be able to do that, and excited to do that as well. So my schedule is going to be crazy. So I'm going to be doing the June class in Palo Alto from June the 5th to the 11th. Then New Jersey, I'll be leaving here on the 15th, so 4 days later, and I'll stay to the 25th. And then after that, we have the Las Vegas class starting on the 10th of July. And that's pretty much the month of July. And then August, we've got some stuff. So we can go to our website, cfibootcamp.com, if you're looking for those kind of things. Also, we are upgrading Pathways product, the private pilots talking, or not breathing, living, breathing syllabus, right? That has all the content loaded, teach any lesson. It's being updated. It should be out here in a few more days. They're just adding titles, make it clearer, right? It's fully functional now, but that's gonna be, that's a game changer. So, and we'll be using that in our classes now as well, and students and our flight instructor applicants really like it. So there's that. So anyway, we're trying to change the world here a little bit. So that's it for here in Miami Beach. We're coming up on Memorial Day weekend, and I'm getting ready to do something. I'm waiting for my hot water to be that gas to be turned on. We had our meters had to be changed, and they didn't tell us. And then I left. I didn't know what was happening, and came back, and everything's off. And the note on the door. So and then they came over, inspected. They said, "Oh, we can't turn it on because of some exhaust thing." So. Hopefully I'll have hot water. It's been about 4 days. So anyway, hopefully I'll have hot water by the next time I talk to you. Anyway, that's it. Have a nice time. Have a nice June, because we're going to not see each other till late June. And if you happen to be in Trenton, New Jersey, stop by. If you happen to be in Las Vegas, stop by. And we'll see you on the next episode of Flight Training the Way I See It. This has been a production of Flight Training the Way I See It. News, tips, and opinion.